Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Man's Sports here on this Sunday afternoon. And we're glad you're planning to spend your time with us here. We have some good things to talk about. I mean, there's so many things going on that we need to discuss and get into. But I would like to welcome the panelists and say, you know, hey guys, how's everybody doing? We have at least four of the panelists with us. There are four more coming on, but right now, we're just here ready to discuss, and if you have something you would like to talk with us about, either you want us to talk about or you want to listen and join in on the conversation we're having, just give us a call at 646-668-8740, and then when asked if you would like to join the show, just say, sure, I would. Well, guys, I'd like to say hello. I see there's Ron, there's Bruce, there's Soel. And Michael. Hello, guys.
Yes.
Hey, everybody.
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and early evening.
There seems to be a lot of press recently on people being burned out. I think everybody knows somebody right now who is saying they're tired, they're burnt out, and the pandemic has caused a lot of this going on. But there's a lot about women are burned out and men need to do their part. The pandemic, it has sickened and killed over 700,000 people in the United States so far. But it has been, you know, very devastating in other ways. Primarily, it says, to American women. And the setback may be permanent if men don't act soon. A new survey shows that 65,000 U.S. workers from the United States found that a whopping one-third of women said they were considering quitting their jobs or reducing their hours. Female workers were more likely to say they were burned out, and more of them were discouraged now that they were in early shocking months of the pandemic. And they said the factors that are causing this is that men are taking up all the jobs. They're not working like they used to be. And women are being pushed by men to excel more than men are. That's a very interesting subject. Say, Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of that just has to do with the society that we're living in. I think women are just starting to take the forefront in just a lot of ways right now. And, yeah, I think coronavirus had a lot to do with it, but I think it's just a societal issue. I just think we're in a big change right now, and I think the change is uncomfortable to some people. The change is comfortable to some people. It's uncomfortable to others. So I think it's just the world we live in, David.
Okay. What about you, Bruce? What are your thoughts?
Well, I would add to what David said, or Michael said, sorry, a little bit and change it to, yes, they're being pushed in a way they want to be pushed, don't they? They want more responsibility, maybe not pushed into it, but they want more opportunity to do different things. But at the same time, as a not just sound demeaning, they're on top of everything that they may have ambitions of doing, they get the lion's share of the home activities and services. It's the mother's position, and I'm not saying anything more than if you were to do a nationwide survey, women do more of the things at home, raising the kids and all that, than men do, no matter what their roles are. So my point is the women may want to have more and more opportunities, but that they're piling some of this added pressure on themselves, and they should have the right to strike that balance any way they want to.
Well, part of the survey says that caring for children has been, with during this pandemic, women are doing most of the work with the kids, but caring for children should be the responsibility of both people who have a child. But women still do most of the work of child rearing, even when those women work outside the house. They're married to men capable of pulling their own weight, but they're not. What do you think, Ron?
Well, I mean, I see it right now going on at work with a colleague, and my colleague is a woman, and her husband, they both work full time, the husband and wife, and they have young kids, and the kids are in school, and one of them had an accident in school the other day and sprained or had a fracture or something, and it was my colleague, the mother, who had to leave work and go to school and pick the kid up and do whatever, you know, take him to the doctor, hospital, whatever. And, so that disrupted her entire day at work, and it set her back, I'm sure, on some impending deadlines that she may have had. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, well, why didn't the father go do that? You know, it should be 50-50. But in that particular situation, I see this happening a lot, and it's the woman that always steps up and tries to be, don't hate me for saying this, but superwoman, and I don't think it's really much different than pre-pandemic, but I think the pandemic just has added a whole new dimension and a lot more stresses that women are trying to still live up to. They're the ones that carry the load, really, for a lot of families. You know, it's very few families that I know where it's split 50-50 or even if the man does more than the woman does. At least that's what I've seen.
But Ron, did you ask your associate, did she want to go to get the child, or was she forced to go because of the husband not stepping up?
No, that's a good question. And I didn't ask her, Bruce, but, who knows? Maybe she uses that as an opportunity to get out of the office. I don't know. But it kind of bothers me too when I had some women reporting to me. And they always had, to take time off for this or that. And I'm saying, well, what about the husband? What's the husband doing, Just my perspective.
You know, the McKinsey report, everybody knows that they do all these reports. Well, they did a survey, and they found out that female managers are more likely than male managers to report doing extra work to improve their workplaces and help the colleagues, everything from checking on employees' well-being and helping them manage their workloads to confronting workplace discrimination, mentoring employees who are members of unrepresented groups, and dedicating extra hours to diversify equality and inclusion initiatives in the workplace. So they said, so it's really hard on men what's going on right now, but I would like to hear, Don, what are your thoughts?
David, I have seen the growth of women continuously prior to COVID-19. I mean, there used to be a time when women were the homemakers, stay home, take care of the babies, and the man go out in the field, kill the meat, and bring it home, and then she cooks it. But the roles have added substantially on the female side because of her quest for equality and her quest for doing more and chipping into the family structure more. And man, I tell you, this is the year of the woman. The woman has just really excelled, rightfully so. It's the mother of the universe. And Ron, I totally concur with you. I like everything you said. I mean, I work with a lot of women in the workforce in the media now, where before women did not even have roles in the media. Now they dominate the media. And they're fun to work with, I'll tell you that, man. They keep it live. They keep it interesting, opposed to flexing for notoriety. They just make it happen. I work with some awesome women here in South Florida.
So, Al, what are your thoughts on this conversation?
Times change, life changes, and that is how our society is. There's more house husbands now and different ways of how people are living their lives. There's more women on the ratio to men in the United States anyway, so it's no surprise that women are filling most of the jobs in the workforce.
All right. All right. Well, that conversation that came up, because I got some messages from people who wanted to hear what your thoughts were. But there's there's a lot going on, and women have been trying to come above in the workforces for years. All I know, there've been a lot of conversation about that. But as we move forward, I think that it's going to be equal. But what they're saying is men need to step up to, at home, take 50-50. The women are still trying to do the cooking and raise the kids and go to work, whereas men come home and don't do anything. And I think that's not true, because there used to be this thing called the list or something that women would do for the men when they came home. Who cuts the lawn? Who paints? Who does all those kinds of things? I don't think that's being part of the equation. But I do think that, it's something that, as Sowell said, time changes, something we're going to have to learn to work together. But anyway, let's move forward. Tell me, Ron, you were talking about some things earlier. What's on your mind? What would you like to discuss?
You're putting me on the spot, David. I don't want to talk about politics again. I mean, even though that seems to always be the focus of everything that goes on around us, but I did hear something this morning that bothered me, and I don't know if you all heard it, but I'll share it with you and hopefully hear your reactions. You know, climate change, of course, is one of the biggest hot buttons topics right now. Sea level rise and taking care of Mother Nature, the environment, all of that, and it's even part of the deal that that Biden and the Democrats are trying to put through right now. And then this morning I heard that our federal government, and we always are quick to criticize what goes on in other countries in terms of fossil fuels and forest degradation, cutting down forests, et cetera, in Brazil. And yet I heard this morning on NPR that our federal government has now listed 20 species of birds, eight, I think, of which used to live in the islands of Hawaii and have disappeared, and one species of plant that no longer exists, completely wiped off the face of the planet forever. And I know what you're thinking. Extinction is part of our world, the world we live in. And yes, while that's true, these species have disappeared mostly because of human caused activities. In the case of the birds in Hawaii, did anybody else hear that? I heard it on NPR this morning for the first time, and the birds disappeared because of their forest being destroyed, and of course that's us humans, and also because of introduction of invasive species, particularly cats and rats and mosquitoes. So this is all caused by us humans, and we're at a crossroad right now. I know that some people think it's an exaggeration that, we're close to reaching the point of no return, so to speak, as many have said. What are your thoughts Bruce on the fact that, you know, we're so quick to point the finger at other places, and yet, you know, oh, and this morning too, by the way, there was a huge oil spill off of California, Michael. I'm sure you heard about that, Huntington Beach.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, and now that's impacting the wetlands in California. I mean, we're destroying the planet, and we includes us Americans. Any thoughts on that, Bruce?
This kind of dance, this kind of back and forth has been going on for some degree since we've lived on this planet. The fact that, yes, we need to do our part, absolutely. But if we're going to be a strong leader in this world, we have to get others to do it too. We could eliminate half our population, shut down everything we do, both electric and gas and you name it, petroleum, and it would be hard to realize that it would make a huge, huge difference in the whole scape of the globe. It does not mean that we shouldn't do our part, but we have to, if we're going to lead by example, then where's the involvement of getting, why aren't we going over and doing whatever we can with China, one of the biggest polluters in the world, to at least show that we're trying to get them to change? I haven't felt that any of that's done, or if we've tried, they basically said, oh, well, you know, you guys do your thing over there. We're gonna do whatever we want. So that's what I'm saying. I don't disagree. We should maybe move toward more alternative power sources like our electrical vehicles and vehicles and that. But we have to make sure we're not knee-jerk reacting and jumping from one situation, one source to another, and then finding out that source is just as detrimental as the first one. I just don't get the sense that we're doing enough to do this in the right steps with the right research and the right facts, so we're doing it in an intelligent, forthright manner.
Michael, you're kind of like us here in Florida. You're in an epicenter of climate disasters, you know, with the wildfires and now with the oil spill, and I mean, the list just goes on and on. What are your thoughts on any of this?
Yeah, thanks for calling on me, Ron. Yeah, it's big out here with that, with the climate change and that oil spill. Yeah, I was actually at the beach recently, and me and my family heard about what was going on. We actually left because we weren't sure if the oil was going to come to us. I know you said you don't want to bring politics into it, and neither do I, but it's unfortunate, Ron, that politics is involved with almost everything we do today. Once again, if the one side, the left, is saying, hey, climate change is a problem, the right is going to push back and say, no, it's not a problem. We don't need to do anything. And at the same time, we are destroying the planet, and I agree that we're at the point of no return. I do feel like that. I feel like we've gone so far with this that I don't know if we can put the toothpaste back in the tube on it, Ron. I mean, we got fires burning. We got crazy tornadoes, crazy rain, crazy storms. We got flooding. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. But yet we still got people who deny that we humans, like you said, are the cause of this. We are. And America has a lot to do with us being the cause of it. So I don't really have an answer, Ron. I think we're just at the point of no return, and there's no turning back at this point.
Yeah, I agree, Michael, with everything you said.
Let me just jump in a little bit, this because there's somebody that has a lot of background noise going on. I'm trying to figure out where it is, but I'm not sure yet. Anyway, go ahead, Ron. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know if somebody was trying to say something, but is Darius on? I'd be curious to hear what Darius has to say.
He's not in yet. I'm sorry.
Oh, he's not in yet. Okay. What about you, Soel?
Can you give me what was the question again?
Well, you know, all the impacts that humans are having on the planet, and you know, I didn't want to bring politics into it, but Michael, thank you for doing that because you're right. You can't disassociate one from the other. You know. It's generally the Democrats and the liberals that are saying, you know, we need to do something about climate change. And the Republicans, generally speaking, are the ones, the naysayers. although I don't want to use that word because that's a negative word, but they're on the other end of the spectrum. I'll put it that way. And you're young, you know, and you're going to be inheriting this planet from us older guys. And it, you know, the trajectory is not a very good looking one right now. What are your thoughts on, you know, what we need to do as a country, as Bruce was saying, you know, to lead and rally the rest of the countries around the world to you know, get our act together before it's too late. I personally think, like Michael, it may already be too late, and I know I've heard other scientists say that, but what are your thoughts?
Well, when it comes to climate change, I do agree we should be going in the direction of, like, reducing the carbon footprint, but we shouldn't be in a way where we should be illegalizing people who want to own gas cars, and, you know, certain states are making it illegal to own certain diesel trucks by, I think, like 2025 or 2030, and technology hasn't been invented yet to replace what you're trying to basically eradicate. How are you going to transport milk and bread from all these farms from rural America all across the United States? I mean, you're going to have shelves empty because electric trucks don't have the capacity to go from Florida to, let's say, California nonstop. And California is my home state, and people talk about climate change, and California politicians talk about, oh, the fires are because of climate change. That's not the case. Do you know that most of the California electric grid was built before 1955? And these are wooden stocks in the forest with redwood trees and everything. And, of course, there's termites. There's all kind of bugs out there, and people crash into these poles and stuff. So, of course, fires are going to come. They don't do controlled burns where they basically eradicate dead trees, dead pollen, all this other kind of stuff. So, of course, the environment is going to have a lot more problems there. And you look at these other states that have nearly as much trees, nearly as much desert as California. They don't have fires all the dang time because they actually manage their state government. They actually manage the environment. I think California has 10 environmental agencies that do the exact same thing. And out here, you know, Nevada is a little different because we have planes coming in all the time. Yes, there's a lot of carbon emissions here. Like, if they just planted more trees, I would say, yes, the environment will be a lot better here, because I went to Georgia for a little while and then I came back. I felt so allergic to the air. Trees are preventing horrible climate change. I will say that. Just investing in trees and investing in greenness is going to actually help us in the future. And, of course, we should just get off of fossil fuels, but I think that is the direction we need to be going in.
Yeah, you bring up a good point that I've heard many times, that trees is probably the simplest answer that we have right in front of us. And I cringe and I cry, really, when I see people cutting down beautiful trees. And I feel like, you know, like I need to plant a tree just to replace the one that somebody else is cutting down. What, one more, Don, here in South Florida now with the king tide and, you know, flooding and all of that, and, of course, South Florida is in the epicenter of sea level rise. What are your thoughts on this whole subject?
You know, I feel the same way you do, Ryan, because I was thinking about getting a condo on the east side of I-95, but I changed my mind.
Mark Madden.
East of 95 is dangerous. I keep thinking about Florida being a peninsula that hangs off the United States. Will it fall into the ocean one day? I don't know. I'm from Michigan, man, surrounded by water, so I've always had that fear on both ends, up north and down south.
Yeah, better invest in some canoes now, Don.
Wow. Well, all right. Let's
Ron.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Bruce.
Yeah, I would add, you know, all we're hearing about now, and I think along the lines that Sal said, we need to do better management of the utilities and the natural resources that we have here. That can help with properly managing climate, excuse me. And you don't hear much, again, about, and we have the brain power to do it, about alternative water sources. You know, fresh drinking water is the next big crisis after you think, and you can call it part of climate, but we're not talking about it much, but Michigan sits on 20% of the fresh water supply in the world. You don't think that we're going to have a water shortage, especially out west, you're sorely mistaken. So why aren't we hearing more about different ways to create fresh water, different energy sources other than electric, because some of the electric system will require some petroleum aspect of it. Why aren't we talking about a smarter, better nuclear energy again, you know, and maybe others that, and solar, even though solar can't do things alone, but out west, it can provide a much better augment to the utility systems and to the energy grid than it can in poor old Michigan. I mean, we don't get enough sun, but you don't hear enough about alternative sources beyond petroleum, and we need to.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bruce.
All right. The one person we haven't heard from is Spencer. Spencer, what are your thoughts on all this? Hello, Spencer?
Maybe he's just waiting for the sports time.
All right. Let's just move on then. Okay, Bruce, what are your thoughts? What do you have on your mind?
Well, I just started thinking about this again today, and I want to say this before you guys get riled up at me, because it will evoke some defensive maneuvers, okay? We have too many people. I'm not accusing myself or any of us on our panel, but we have too many people and politicians and everybody else that says we have to have quotas now in almost anything. We have to have quotas in positions, we have to have quotas in jobs, we have to have quotas in this and that. So my little experiment is this. If we look at every major sport in the United States, we are severely misrepresented in those sports. We have one group that far exceeds most of all the others, whether they're minority groups or not, and of course even the definition of minority is changing, but football, hockey, baseball, soccer, you name it. So if that's the case, why aren't we taking that and pushing that all these other groups of people should have a much better representation in these sports? Now, I'll start answering with my own question. I'll answer my own question. Because the way it should really work is the best talent rises to the top and should be in that sport or whatever. Using that as an example, the best talent should rise to the top and be representative in whatever the percentage is in either any of those positions. So I bring that up because sports is if we're going to go quotas, almost every sport is severely unbalanced. Any comments, gentlemen? Not a one? Michael. Come on, Michael.
Well,
you chicken.
I mean, I really... No, just can you explain the question a little more in detail? What's the exact question?
Well, the question is, in football... In almost all major sports, okay, mm-hmm. We have minority African Americans that are almost completely dominant in all those sports. I feel they are because of their talent. But if we're going to go quotas, there should not be near as many of one minority, and there should be some many more of other minorities or other groups, and we're not doing that. So why is that any different if we're going to go quotas and that sort of thing versus real talent should fill the bill in every category? Because I think we'd be much better off if talent was the real qualifier.
Okay, yeah, I got an answer for that one, Bruce, because it always amazes me when guys like you, you probably really just don't know the answer to this question, but it always amazes me when you guys ask that question. Because as I always say, for 276 years in this country, we only hired one particular race of people, and that was the white man. Okay, so now all of a sudden we're saying, hey, let's diversify the pool a little bit. And you guys are going, well, how about we just get the most talented person? Okay, for the last 276 years, there's been a lot of talented people other than just white men. But however, the white man has always only gotten those positions. So why is it that historically you didn't go by the most talented person, but now all of a sudden you want to go by the most talented person for the job? So that's
well,
the answer
Michael,
to that question. Go ahead.
It's interesting that you always segmented into white and black. I didn't do that. I said all the other minority groups. You're the one that went white and black. I did not. I'm saying if we're going to have quotas, then there should be a certain percentage of black, a certain percent of Hispanic, a certain percentage of white, a certain percent of other ones. That's what I'm saying, if that's what we're going to do. I didn't say black
okay.
and white.
Fair enough. I'll accept that this should be diverse for everybody. It shouldn't just be diverse for black. It should be diverse for Latinos, for Asians, for everyone. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
I take your point. But the reason I go to black and white, because it was the black population that were Jim Crow slaves, the most oppression inflicted on them in this country. So in my personal opinion, that should be the group that should get the first dibs or the one up before the other groups. So that's why I always take it to black and white. And number one, I am a black man, so I'm always going to stand up for my community and my culture.
Duly noted.
All right. Joe.
Anybody else?
I'd like
no?
to add something.
Well, I'm surprised.
All right, Soel, go ahead.
Personally, I think that selecting person on their race is not necessarily ethical. I mean, I think the only thing that really should matter when it comes to someone is their scholarship, their worth as a person. Like Asian people, when they were applying for Harvard, it kind of became known that, oh, Asian people get into Harvard. And Harvard was trying to gentrify the pool a little bit and was trying to get more black people into the school when the Asian people had a higher SAT score, higher ACT score, higher GPA, and they ended up suing the school and they ended up getting the money and everything. And also, when it comes to professional sports, I will say this, the NBA and NHL are probably the least diverse sports. And that's probably just because of the way how they've marketed the sports. In Canada, a whole bunch of white kids play hockey. That's what they do. And black people, usually to stay out the streets and stuff, they play basketball with their friends, and they get really good at it. It's just a matter of circumstances, how people are good at certain things, and that's just how circumstances are.
All right.
Hey, so let me ask you a question real quick to that point. Oh, I'm sorry if I cut someone off. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Hey, so, well, to that point about, as I said to Bruce, and you're a younger guy, so I'm glad to hear you kind of taking Bruce's side on this. It's kind of interesting. But don't you agree that, because you said it should be all about the talent and how the Asians got upset because they were more talented and they couldn't go forward. But don't you agree that for many, many years it was the black race who was government sanctioned to make sure we didn't move ahead further in life, and that for 276 years it wasn't just about talent. So for it to all of a sudden want to be just about talent now, it's kind of hypocritical. Do you not agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And I think that pre-1965, when there was a lot of hate, a lot of prejudice out there, there were systematic systems in place to prevent black people and people of color from succeeding. But I will say very prominent athletes like Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, Jackie Robinson, when they were not equally treated as their white counterparts, they refused to play. Like, okay, you don't want to see the black guy play. You don't, you're not going to see me play. I mean, dollars are not white or black, they're green. And that was their whole point. You should treat me as an individual on this team that deserves to be recognized as Jerry West and all the other white guys, and I deserve to be paid the same and recognized the same and be able to play on the All-Star game with them as well. And due to what they did, they were the pioneers that allowed people like Jordan and Rodman and all those other guys to be very successful in the sport and to be able to be recognized as equals.
All right.
And can I add one more thing?
Sure.
To agree a little bit with you, Michael, I don't know the exact day where it significantly has started to change, but you're right, and Soel is too, that in the past there was not a fair way of things were handled. I agree with that, but it still should be now. An excellent African American basketball player, or an excellent Canadian hockey player, or an excellent white baseball player, and on and on and on. Those, irrespective of their race, will rise to the top more so than ever now and be the prominent people to not only be excellent in their sport, but to inspire others that represent their group or their race to excel.
Well, Bruce, don't you agree that the one race had a head start on the other one? So they're, in regards to the boardroom, I'm not talking about sports. In regards to the boardroom,
oh, yeah,
the black guy's never going to make it into the boardroom because the white guy had a head start.
I would say that. I would say not only race, but gender.
All right, gentlemen. Don, where are you on this subject? You haven't said a lot today. And Don, that feedback is coming out.
Yeah, and you know something, David? I was just listening, and I was just listening to what was being said, and I'm so happy with the governor of Florida making such a profound statement and making a move that a lot of politicians have never made. He said, when we know better, we do better when we find out. And he gave the oceanfront property back to a black family which had been taken away from them. And it's going to be generational blessings to own a piece of land off the Pacific Ocean of California. Michael, do you know anything about that?
Yes, I'm very well aware of the situation. It's called Bruce's Beach, just to educate those listening real quick. Bruce's Beach was a beach right on the Pacific Ocean. It was owned by a black couple. And in 1912, the local government took the property from them by eminent domain. And now today that property is worth millions of dollars. So long story short, the government of California gave that property back just yesterday to the Bruce family, who had it stolen from them 100-plus years ago. So, yes, that's a beautiful thing. That's actually the first time reparations have ever been given to a black family in America. So I hope it opens the door for many more.
All right. Okay, so any other comments about this subject? One of the things that is going on right now, and I want to hear you gentlemen, since this, let's take this as a segue into what I want to tell you. It seems that across the United States, race history is trying to be put into the curriculum of high school, junior high school, and high school education. And there's a lot of fight against it, and there's a lot of fight for it because there are two different sides. One is how are the teachers supposed to teach it, and how can you guarantee that they're teaching it correctly? So do you think that race relations and race should be a part of high school, junior high school curriculum, Ron?
Do I think that race should be a part of the curriculum? Absolutely. I think, you know, we need to know where we come from in order to make decisions on our future. We need to know who we are as a people, and the only way to know that is to learn the truth of what really happened in our history.
Well, let me rephrase that. Race in the United States, that is, it's a history thing for the curriculum, and I know that in Texas they're fighting against it, whereas in other states they're not. So what are your thoughts on that, Don? What do you think?
I think, along with Ron, I think it should be taught in high school, race relations, maybe in junior high school. And so we can get to know where people come from, where they are now, and their desires in life. So we have a more understanding and communication level. I mean, we need to have that taught in school. It's ridiculous. I agree with you, Ron. It should be taught in school.
Thank you.
Okay. What about you, Bruce?
I would also agree with one caveat, that it should be the history, not a political slant, not an interpretation, not a theory, but a history. And if that's truly, as I heard you two gentlemen say, what needs to be done and more of it, I'm right there with you. Couldn't agree more.
All right. Well, you're still in that age category. What do you think that race relations should be taught in school?
It depends. I mean, not really, but it depends on, like, the age you're really setting it into. I mean, most children don't really have the concept of racism or race, really. It's just a matter of when you introduce it. Like, I literally thought in class with my Hispanic and white friends, I thought, oh, we're literally just the same as everybody else. And then when middle school came around and they were talking about slavery, I'm like, oh, wow, that happened. I didn't realize. So it really just depends, and relative to parents on how they feel about it.
So give me, in your mind, a caveat on what would be the right way to do it. And what age?
Parental approval. I think finding, like, the right age to introduce it to kids is also something as well. Also having the option to opt out. Really, parents just deciding if they want to have their kids introduced to that, or if they themselves want to teach that to their kids. Many people have a different way of doing things and want to introduce certain aspects of life and culture to their kids. So mainly about letting the parents have a choice, opting out if they want to, and just being able to make that decision for themselves.
So you're saying that you're going to leave it up to the parent to say whether a child should be taught, that everybody in the class is equal?
Well, yeah, I mean, equal. I'm talking more about, like, race stuff, like, why black people can't do this or why Hispanic people can't do that. I mean, of course, like, everybody is equal, and you're talking about, like, equal rights amendments and all of that kind of stuff. I'm talking about really getting involved in, like, race relations and other stuff like that.
Okay. That's questionable. Michael, what's your opinion?
Okay, thanks for calling on me on this one. I'm split on this one, this topic. And one reason being, as far as the age and what grade, I'm split on when you should start teaching it. I absolutely think you should teach it. Because, and I'll tell you a quick little story why. When I was in junior high, I went to a diverse junior high school, and I had a white friend, Kevin. Kevin and I were really good friends. And then we took history and we learned about slavery. And after that, Kevin and I were just never the same. We just weren't, for some reason. Our friendship just kind of went in a different direction once we learned that his ancestors abused mine so horribly. It just made his and my relationship with Kevin just wasn't the same. So I think teaching it at such an early age does kind of create a divide amongst them at a early age. I do agree with that a little bit. But I absolutely think it should be taught. And to Bruce, Bruce, a couple weeks ago we talked about this, and you asked what was critical race theory, and I didn't have an educated answer because I wasn't that up on it. Well, now I do, so I want to just break it down real quick, what critical race theory is. It's teaching the history in another light, meaning we all know about Thomas Jefferson. We all know Thomas Jefferson fathered a child with a woman named Sally Hemingway, and he did great things for this country, Thomas Jefferson. We all know that because that's what we were taught. Critical race theory goes, hey, he also raped Sally Hemingway. He imprisoned her. He put her in a room and kept her in there for 4 years, and that's what all those guys were doing back then. She was only 12 years old. So we want to teach that part of Thomas Jefferson as well in regards to critical race theory. And that's just an example, Bruce. It's just a lot of things about history that we as black people want to teach about how bad our people really were abused and not just make it a nice little love story.
And Michael, to your respect, what was my answer when we talked about that? You want me to refresh? My answer was, I don't have a problem with that. We should teach what history really was. No slants, no interpretations, no overdone one way or the other to the advantage of one or the other. Tell it like it really was. I agree with that. If it was done with the right teachers, and God knows we have some unbelievably great teachers in our country, the right teacher would know how to do that in a way that if all of those things that you're concerned about, Michael, are known, but known in a way where it doesn't, hopefully, doesn't turn one race against another or it stimulates a lot of questions, and you will have some separation as was just explained, as I think Soel just explained. Or you did, Michael. But I also had a similar experience. I grew up and went to school in interracial schools all the way up to college, and there too. But the different races were a different mix. So I had situations where when we had that, and the timing, I agree with you, is right. If you do it too early, you get probably a bad reaction. If you do it right, it creates dialogue, and we had dialogue. We had a lot of dialogue, knockdown, drag out, verbal discussions, not fight, that I learned a lot from, and I think the other people that were of a different race and color of me did as well. That was productive in my life.
All right.
One of the subjects I think that what Michael brought up was interesting to say that teaching it like it was, slavery and how slaves were considered lower class, no class at all, with on the Caucasian world, teach it at that level could be devastating, especially depending on the child and what you get when you get home to your parents. So let me see. Ron, can you put together a quick curriculum? How do you think this subject should be taught? Should it be from pre-civil rights, or should we teach it in terms of increments of there were slaves, this is the way it was, and on? But the bottom line of it should be that it should be a positive, not a negative, right?
I'm not sure I understand the question, David.
Well, how would you think the curriculum should go teaching this subject in school?
Now that I heard a couple of our panelists talk about, you know, that depending on the age, you know, it could make a different kind of impact. I do agree with that. So I think that should go into the equation, but I think just stating the facts and keeping to the facts, just like when you report the news, and sometimes, you know, there's a tendency to put subjectivity into it, but if you just stick to the facts and report exactly what happened and don't deviate from that, I think you can't go wrong.
But the fact is basically negative. So
so be it. I'm sure there were some positive too. I mean, you know, I wasn't there, but I know what I learned in American history. And yes, it was all, you know, I don't remember any of the negative aspects of it. Maybe I wasn't ever taught, you know, the negative aspects. I really don't remember, but, you know, we should know the facts and we should know what happened, even if it's negative. That's my opinion.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on that one, Soel?
It kind of goes to what I was talking about, you know, just age and really finding the right time, because trying to explain something to a three-year-old that's more something that an eight-year-old's going to grasp is really different. So it's really just about how you explain something, the way you do it, how you do it, and just when is the right time to do it.
All right, so let me ask you this question then, because I think, what age do you think, what grade level do you think this should happen?
I think past elementary school. Like, I think maybe the first year of middle school, second year of middle school, maybe before high school.
So should be middle school up U.S. history. Is that what you're saying? Part of
I think
history.
That's more appropriate.
All right. What about you, Bruce? What grade level would you say this should start?
Well, before I answer the grade level, you know, it just got me thinking. What a positive it would be to have history classes back in our curriculum. wouldn't it, guys? I mean, we've been sorely leaving that out for too many years. So that would be a huge plus if it's done right. To the point of what grade? You'd kind of have to answer it. You could start. I don't think you need to start, you know, super low. Maybe the very upper end of grade school into middle school. I think middle school is better. But even in middle school, you phase it. Certain brains that are developing, certain levels of classes would hear and be taught certain things, and that would be built upon as they advance in their classes. I mean, you don't just put it all on someone at 1 year and say, now start to digest that and follow through. You kind of build on the history just like it occurred, and just like the classes advance and students mature. So I would tend to agree the middle class first, you know, after the elementary class.
All right. I'm Michael. Let's talk about something we have only 7 minutes. We should do a little bit of sports, but for the next 2 or 3 minutes, what is it you would like to talk about with the panel?
I want to talk about what's going on in our government. I know we're talking about politics, but they're trying to get this bill through, Joe Biden's agenda, his infrastructure bill, and it looks like to me it's going to fail, which I think will be a big failure for Joe Biden and his presidency. So I just want to hear what other people on the panel think about that. Bruce?
Well, the way they're going about it, I don't know if it's going to be a total failure, but he's not going to get the original that he wanted. I would agree with you in that regard. And yes, it'll be a big negative on him, even though he hasn't even been in the office a year. So I think they could have, and even some of the Democrats are saying, they should have done the true infrastructure first, the things that everybody tended to agree on. Get that passed. Get yourself a win, and then move on from there. So, but it doesn't seem like there's a certain part of that Democratic group that's pushing him a different direction. And if he doesn't stand up to that and do it in that win first and build on that, he's going to get hurt bad.
What do you think, Don? What about you, Ron?
Yeah, I agree with what Bruce just said. I mean, and you too, Michael. I mean, I don't know that this is going to be a big blemish on Biden's presidency. And it's sad. You know, it's sad because there are so many things that both sides can agree on But I think it's a lot of egos in the play, going into play here, and you know, there's so many things that need to get done in this country to move it forward that two sides can't agree on certain things is ridiculous.
What about you, Soel?
Firstly, I think what happened with this infrastructure bill, there was so much stuff in there that was not related to infrastructure, like the stimulus bills. They had stuff for Planned Parenthood in there. They had stuff for the Kennedy Center in there. What does that have to do with fixing bridges, infrastructure, water infrastructure in this country? They're putting so much stuff in there just so the Democrats can have, like, some crumbs, and the Republicans are going to be super anal about it, like, well, I read the whole thing, and it doesn't have to do with fixing roads and bridges. If they had simply just kept the bill to the letter, maybe you would have gotten some Republicans to vote on it, and that's probably and mainly one of the reasons why the Democrats, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, who are like the old-school moderate Democrats, why they're being so hostile about it and holding that thing hostage.
All right, gentlemen. We've had lots of requests of, like, why did we do our sports? So we might as well get the sports done. All right, Spencer, I take it you're there. Well, good to know, Spencer.
I am.
The Associated Press just put out their top 25 college football teams. Number one, Alabama Crimson Tide. Number two, the Georgia Bulldogs. And number three, Iowa Hawkeyes. Do you agree? And tell me why those colleges are doing so well. Especially, why is Georgia Bulldogs number two?
Oh, they're just playing outstanding football, outstanding defense. Like they always do, you know, it's just they just have to run into an Alabama team that's also playing good, and I'm surprised that their quarterback is actually doing so well. I thought he'll be slumped along the way, even with Ole Miss, but he's handling business, and they're looking like the top team to beat again this year. But if Georgia could just get that one play out the way against them, I think they could go all the way. So yes, I think the rankings is pretty much fit. Them being number two, Iowa's playing very good, and also Cincinnati that beat a very good Notre Dame team yesterday is also a team that we need to keep a watch out for.
Okay, tell me, in grading the first round rookies in the NFL, how do you think they're doing, and who do you think is really showing out?
Actually, all of them, you know, it's only four games in. Some of the rookies, they have some rough starts, but, you know, who haven't? I think, you know, Trevor Lawrence playing very well, and Zach Wilson today for the Jets got them their first win. Actually showed some poise and showed some growth at home today, and ended up getting a big win over the Tennessee Titans, which was just their first win of the year, but it was a big win for them. So I think he stepped up and showed out. I think all the rookies are actually doing pretty well. You know, it's still a long season. It's a lot. To take in. Mac Jones got to go against Tom Brady today, so maybe he can, you know, learn something from this game, or just learn something from the greatest Patriot ever, as people would say. So, you know, I think it's still yet to be seen, but they're doing pretty well, in my opinion.
Greatest Wolverine ever, by the way.
Yes.
Just so you don't forget that.
Okay, Spencer, anything in sports we need to know that we didn't ask you?
I guess this is a developing story with the NBA and the vaccinations. I know it's this whole big thing, and they're going to, some players are opposed to getting vaccinated. Some of the older guys are saying they're being selfish by not getting vaccinated and protecting their teams and their teammates.
All right. Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead. We got about 15 seconds.
Oh, no, I was just saying, this is an ongoing story that I'll keep a lookout for and have more
right.
on it later.
We'll need some update on that next week, but we want to thank everybody for listening. I thank the panel for being here. All right, guys, have a great week. Everyone, have a great week.
Have a great week, everybody.
God bless.
Thank you. Thank you.